life is o'er, I'll fly away to a home on God's celestial shore. I'll fly away. I'll fly away, oh glory, I'll fly away. When I die, hallelujah, by and by, I'll fly.
Welcome to the radio program Genesis and the Gates of Hell. Everyone knows the book of Genesis, even if they haven't studied it, but the gates of hell is a less known phrase that is in the New Testament. It is the phrase used by Christ when he was with the disciples at Caesarea Philippi near the Sea of Galilee. Christ was telling his disciples that the church will go on the offensive against Satan, and Satan will not prevail, but the church will prevail. That is what this radio program is about. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." Is that true? For a Christian, it is truth. In John chapter 1, it says, "All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men, and the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not." When your children come home from school or college with the notion that the stories in Genesis are untrue because science says it is not true, how do you respond? When you ask, "What are you talking about?" they will generally respond, "Science says so." Your response should be that science has changed, but the Bible has not. You can no longer reject the stories of Genesis because science disproves it, because recent scientific discoveries reaffirm the stories in Genesis.
Well, here we are at the next episode of the Genesis and Gates of Hell show, and we are already in chapter 19. And this is one of the most interesting and diabolical chapters in the book of Genesis. And it's about Lot and his family and what happened at Sodom and Gomorrah. And if everyone will remember, in one of our previous lessons, we talked about how Lot had separated from Abram. His name was Abram then. And he took his livestock and his possessions and looked over the terrain and went toward Sodom and Gomorrah. And Abram looked to God and he went another direction.
Yep.
Okay, so you have decided that we could spend an entire session on verse 1. I know that we'll get past verse 1.
Well, maybe 2. Verse 2. To verse 2.
So let's read chapter 19, verse 1.
And 2.
The two angels arrived at Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting in the gateway of the city. When he saw them, he got up to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. "My lords," he said, "please turn aside to your servant's house. You can wash your feet and spend the night, and then go on your way early in the morning." "No," they answered, "we will spend the night in the square." Boy, that's a... 99.9% of that people that read that have no idea of the significance of the statement. "No," they answered, "we will spend the night in the square."
Hmm.
So I have a lot to say about that. So tell me what your study was about verse 1.
Well, I'm going to tell you, this is interesting. As I delved into this, I realized that sitting in the gate of Sodom has far more meaning than just sitting there. The gate to the city was an archway, and they had benches built into the sides of the entrance, so it was a walled entrance. And they have actually discovered these these seats that were built into the sides of the walls. And the gates of the city were actually the courthouse.
Yeah, it's called the elders.
The elders.
And the gates of Jerusalem.
That's right. The elders would sit there, and there was judgment and justice carried out at the gates, even to the point of there is a section in the Bible that speaks of if you have a young boy who is not minding you and not doing what he's told, take him to the gates, and they'll stone him to death.
No, they won't necessarily stone him to death. They will administer what they think needs to be done to him, which might include stoning him to death.
Right. So even death sentences were pronounced there at the gates. And so what we find is, you know, when Lot first set his tent facing towards Sodom, now Lot was a wealthy man. He was quite wealthy. But now we see that he's sitting in the gates. He has become a civic leader, a magistrate almost, if you will. And as a matter of fact,
in Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yes. So he's not only become a leader and inculcated Sodom into his life, he owns a house inside Sodom now. See? So he's no longer just camping outside of Sodom. He is a citizen. And
he's no longer the nomad.
That's it. So he has...
he's a man of property.
What do they say? He's drank the Kool-Aid, so to speak.
Yep.
And I thought that was very, very telling of the fact, because today...
But now, wait a minute. Keep that thought.
Yeah.
True. He's drunk the Kool-Aid. But what did he do when he saw these men coming?
What would you do if you saw two strangers coming towards you? Would you invite them into your home?
Huh. This was a different time. But what he did do was he laid down on the ground, bowed down, and laid down in front of them. This was a reverent act.
I don't know about that.
Well, I do.
He bowed himself with his face toward the ground, but he didn't realize they were angels. He didn't know they were angels until they blinded those people outside the house. Up until that point, he just thought they were strangers, and it was incumbent upon him as a civic leader.
He said, bowed down with his face to the ground.
To the ground.
Ah, well, my lords, he said, please turn aside to your servant's house.
Right.
So he's inviting these strangers in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now he recognizes something about them.
He was in a position as a civic leader to greet visitors and offer them both hospitality and protection. That was a custom in that day. Hospitality was a sacred obligation.
Yeah, we talked about that a couple of
absolutely
lessons ago.
And so that's what he did here.
But you have to remember also that he was like Abram. When Abram saw the angels, he was, what's the word, sitting
in the gate
of his tent, or the flap of his tent, the opening of his tent. But the difference is when Abram saw him, he got up and he ran toward them. And then he bowed down and fell on the ground in front of them. That's what Abram did.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, all of this happens during Abram's lifetime and during Lot's lifetime. But the difference in the greeting of these holy men, Lot deals with it one way, Abram deals with it in another way.
Yeah, I think Abram recognized it to be the Lord when he saw them, the three coming toward him. He recognized them because when he ran to him, he said, my Lord, if now thou wilt stay with me, you know.
But even Lot says, my lords, he said, please turn aside to your servant's house. So he acknowledges a superiority with them.
And I think that his whole idea or his obligation was to... take care of them. You know, we find, let me show you some scripture in Hebrews. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares.
That's right.
In Matthew, the stranger who sojourns with you shall be to you as the the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself. And then in Matthew, again, I was a stranger and you welcomed me. And this is going to lead us to what I think is one of the most beautiful lessons of this chapter.
All right, before we do that, I've got to correct my statement. Abram in chapter 18, verse 2, it says, when he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. So they greeted him both the same way. Abram greeted him similar. All right.
Yeah. So Lot was this civic leader, and he had this, I think, this moral obligation to be very hospitable toward them and ask them to stay with him. And I thought about that myself. I wouldn't feel so comfortable letting two strangers come into my house and stay with me. I don't know what kind of house he had. It was probably huge. I mean, it's not like we got two bedrooms and two baths. You know, it's not like you're going to bump elbows with him. I imagine his estate was sprawling. He had so many servants. They could have easily taken care of two strangers. And I'm sure he had warriors, and he had all types of stewards and maids and such.
And that verse that you read before, was that from Hebrews?
Hebrews.
Hebrews 13, 2?
Yes.
Okay.
So you know, but this gate I thought was interesting because this is where business was conducted, and I didn't realize Lot was most likely some man of prominence. And we find that when he brought those strangers into his house and all of the Sodomites gathered outside and wanted to come into the house, they told him, stand back. This one fellow came in to sojourn, and he will needs be a judge. Now we'll deal worse with thee than with them. So we see the inclination here that those that were from Sodom looked at Lot as a stranger, right? You want to be a judge yourself. You come here, a sojourner. You come here from somewhere else, and now you're going to sit in judgment of us. And I was born and raised here. Yeah, how many times have you heard that?
Oh, yeah.
This is my church, right? I have the deed to this church at home in my basement, in my safe. This is my church. And you know, I've experienced that. You might be a member, but you know what? You're never going to be one of us. You're always going to be an outsider. And that's the way they were looking at Lot. Lot, you're an outsider.
I've spent enough money with this church, I ought to have some say-so.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's simply the flesh coming to the top. But so, yeah, they resented Lot. And I think they were ready to do to him worse than what they wanted to do to the strangers, right?
I hadn't thought of it in those terms, but that's obvious.
Mm-hmm. They didn't care about him.
It's called new money.
Well, not only that, but, you know, I think it's a testament to the fact that Lot had somewhat lost status in Sodom, in that not everybody, you know, adored him. And so I think what we see is that Lot is becoming diluted. His righteousness is being diluted in a way. And that's certainly a testament when he offered his daughters up. That was not an honorable parental thing to do, was it?
It is inconceivable.
Yeah.
It's inconceivable.
And I think that we need to heed this lesson. So Lot camps towards Sodom. Then now he buys a house and moves into the gates of Sodom. Then he becomes a leader, a civic leader in Sodom. And so we have to be very careful to guard against associating with evil. even by drawing near to it, it can result in our corruption.
Well, it's interesting that Lot greets them, calls them my lords, and then he invites them into his home, and they say, you can wash your feet, he says, you can wash your feet and spend the night, and then go on your way in the morning. They said, no, they answered, we will spend the night in the square. Mm. Now, what does that mean, spend the night in the square? Let's go to 2 Chronicles 32. And in 2 Chronicles 32, verse 6, here is where Sennacherib is threatening Jerusalem. Now, this is the Assyrian king, and he has surrounded Jerusalem, and it is under siege. And Hezekiah, to say, after all, verse 32 begins, chapter 32, after all that Hezekiah had so faithfully done, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came and invaded Judah. He laid siege to the fortified city, thinking to conquer them for himself. When Hezekiah saw that Sennacherib had come and that he intended to make war on Jerusalem, he consulted with his officers and military staff about blocking off the water, etc. Well, Hezekiah eventually, I think it didn't Hezekiah, wasn't he the one that dug the tunnel that had the water, that created the water so that the city would survive?
I seem to remember that.
And so, at any rate, going on to verse 6, it says, he appointed military officers over the people and assembled them before him in the square at the city gate and encouraged them with these words, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged because of the king of Assyria and the vast army with him. For there is a great power with us, a greater power with us than with him. Now this is Hezekiah speaking to his military leaders. Where?
In the square.
In the city square. The city square was not an insignificant, not just a park over on the side of the road where the kids swing back and forth or have a seesaw. The city square was used for all kinds of things. I'm sure it was a marketplace, but then when the leaders got together, like with the military, that's where they would meet. They'd meet in the city square.
So it was a place of assembly?
A place of assembly.
Yeah, yeah.
So the idea being, it's a safe place.
Hmm.
It's a safe place. This is the city square. You can easily go there and pitch a tent and spend the night.
Hmm.
And what does Lot say?
Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that.
No, please don't.
Because why does he do that? Why does he say that? He knows what this town's like.
He sure does. And, of course, the angels went there with the express purpose of determining that the town was exactly like they had heard from the cries of the people, right? You remember in the last chapter, God said, I want to find out if the cries of the people are indeed true. Well, of course, he knew they was true. He was telling Abraham that. And so I think the angels, I don't think they would have had any problem sleeping overnight in the city square. They could have wiped Sodom out themselves, and probably those two angels did.
Well, they did. Said they were going to.
Yeah, just two angels.
So we need to go. I interrupted that because I thought the statement about the city square is important because I see the same thing happening to us now.
Hmm. How so?
The same thing is happening in the city square. Would you go to a city square in New York City?
No.
And take a nap?
Not California either, or Detroit.
No, I wouldn't mind one bit taking a...
Right. We're blessed.
And we're blessed. If I wanted to, I could take a nap out there by the fountain in this little town, and I wouldn't be... Well, anything could happen. Could be get run over by a car, but statistically, I just wouldn't be concerned about my safety right there. in the city square here. But I would, I would, where this kind of activity is going on, and this is going to lead us to another section in Romans. I don't know if you found this one in your examination, but in verse 5, I'm jumping around here. I'm sorry. We're going to spend more time on this.
We have to. We have just too much in this chapter.
Anyway, verse 5, it says, they called to Lot, where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us so that we can have sex with them. Well, there's a reference in Genesis, in Romans. It is, let's see, verse 5. It is Romans 1, chapter 1, 18 through 27. I'm going to read some of this. We don't need to read all of it, but we can certainly read some of it. Oh, come on. I've got it marked. Here we go. God's wrath against mankind in Romans chapter 1, verse 18. The wrath of God is being revealed from heaven against all the godlessness. The wickedness of men who suppress the truth by their wickedness, since what may be known about God is plain to them, because God has made it plain to them. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse. So looking around the world and seeing what's been made, it's obvious there is a God. That's what Paul is saying, and not what Paul is saying, what God is saying, but through Paul, what he's saying. Okay. For although they knew God, they neither glorified him. I got to stop here. Lot acknowledged these people as lords. He knew they were lords. He knew who these people represented. He bowed down to them. Okay. For although they knew God, and what does that mean? Not only did Lot know who God was, but all these reprobates in Sodom and Gomorrah knew who God was.
Mm-hmm.
Now, although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him. But their thinking became futile, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Okay, so Sodom turned reprobate. They turned from God.
Yeah, I think Sodom certainly had went their own way, which wasn't toward God at all.
And it also,
not even, he couldn't even find 10 righteous men in Sodom. Right.
That's right. Righteous men. That's right.
Yeah.
Although they claimed to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images made to look like mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles. Therefore, God gave them over in their sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity for the degrading of their bodies with one another. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie. That's what happens. God tells us that's what happens when you become this reprobate society. You turn your, what's the first thing you do? The sexual immorality happens. That's what he says happens. I didn't make these rules up. God told us in Romans, he said, I'm going to read it again. Therefore, God gave them over in their sinful desires of their hearts to sexual impurity for the degrading of their bodies with one another. They exchanged the truth of God for a lie. and worshiped and served created things rather than the Creator. Because of this, God gave them over to shameful lust. Even their women exchanged natural relations for unnatural ones. In the same way, the men also abandoned natural relations with women and were inflamed with lust for one another. Talk about inflamed for lust. Look what happened to Lot and his daughters and his home when they were all surrounded.
Yeah, and look at how, you know, Sodom demonstrates eventually how associating with darkness can compromise our judgment. And it encroaches on the light we have, and it produces rotten deeds eventually. And so we see, you know, the Bible doesn't condemn Lot specifically for offering his daughters up. But the Bible, there's no way you can approve it. There's no way you can say that that was righteous. But well, in the same breath,
there's nothing in the Bible that said God told him that was a good idea.
No, no. But in the same breath, you see him showing great love for a stranger. And I want to get this out. This I think, the way Lot treated these two angels with hospitality, I think that this shows us the gospel all in its completeness. Our behavior toward not only strangers but to all men represent the entire message of the gospel. We find it in Ephesians. Paul said that at that time ye were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. And he goes on to say, now therefore ye are no more strangers and foreigners, but fellow citizens with the saints and the household of God. You at one time were strangers to God. And God didn't turn you away, and he treated you with much more hospitality than Lot did with these two angels. So God tells us, remember that fact. When you are asked to help others, your fellow man, this is the gospel. Love thy neighbor. And I think Lot demonstrated a great love for these strangers, even though he was so wrong in offering up his daughters as an appeasement, trying to take care of sin with sin, is what he was doing there. So there's no way we can approve Lot's discernment in doing that. But nonetheless, he did show love for his neighbors. So it's hard to reconcile what Lot was doing and thinking. But I believe we see that by Lot trying to appease these people, it shows the level of depravity that he had already adopted by living among them, right? It shows a very unreasonable logic that he displayed to do such a thing. So, we can't associate with evil. We can't lay down with pigs and expect to get up clean. You're going to be dirtier. The pigs aren't going to get up cleaner, right? Your cleanness is not going to rub off on a bunch of muddy pigs. And I think that's why the Bible speaks to us that you can't walk hand in hand with someone you don't agree with. You can't do it. And so as a people that are a part of the household of God, we got to be very cautious who we associate with. I'm sorry, but we do.
I think that there was some repentance on the part of Lot because of the method and manner in which he greeted these men and expressed hospitality. The rest of Sodom did not greet them that way. Mm-mm. He said, come on in, let me invite you into my home. Basically what he's saying, let me protect you.
Right.
Let me protect you. It's almost like Lot went to Sodom and Gomorrah and he enjoyed all of the fleshly perversions mm-hmm. that were going on there, but he had not totally turned loose of his
His righteousness, his love for God.
His love for God, his righteousness.
And you know,
was he a sinner? Yeah. He enjoyed the approbation, yes.
Yeah.
But had he quit believing?
Yeah.
No.
Well, I mean, you know, this goes up time and time again. I mean, look at David. He was a man after the heart of God, but boy, look at what he did. And look at Abram. His faith was counted for righteousness, but look at what he did. And I think we've said it before. It's a good thing our faith doesn't depend on our deeds.
Yes, that's right. And I have just been told we're out of time.
Well, we'll stay in Genesis a little while longer chapter.
In this chapter 19, we'll come back to it. And until next week, y'all have a great week. God bless you.
Make good decisions.
We are not mighty by the world's measure, nor wise, nor of noble standing. And yet God has called us out as a royal priesthood, that we should show forth his truth and declare his glory. Though our program rejoices in seeing the handiwork of God's creation, and we stand amazed at his order and intelligent design, we do not rest our message there, nor do we seek to persuade or convince you by the wisdom and science of this age. For we are not here to prove God by secular means, nor add to the sufficiency of Christ crucified, which is the power of God unto salvation to all who believe. Until our next broadcast, may the Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace.
Some glad morning when this life is o'er, I'll fly away to a home on God's celestial shore.